get back to the Stinson.
The airfield?
Yeah,
Stinson. Okay, so Northwell had his own airfield right out there, and they would reassemble the wing on the Stinson airplane, and then they would fly it out, and they would fly it around and make sure it worked right, and they practically had every plane sold before they could get it built. Talking about the airfield, I remember one Sunday, I came home from church, and my father said, today we're going out to the airfield and see a person named Amelia Earhart. And I said, well, who is Amelia Earhart? A boy of 10 or 11 years old, I never heard of this person named Amelia Earhart. So my father informed me that she was probably the finest lady aviator in the world. And she was going to attempt to fly around the world by herself. It wouldn't be non-stop, but she would be flying around the world, the first woman to ever attempt to fly around the world. So we went out to the airport, and so my father said, well, we got an hour or two to wait. Would you like to go for a ride in an airplane? And I had never been in an airplane before in my life, and I was scared to death. So in those days, they just had a two-seater plane, one for the pilot and one for the passenger, and it was all open. So they put a pair of goggles on you and a hat on your head. And of course, my head was so small I couldn't have a hat on, but my father put a hat on and he put me on his lap. And it cost him $5, which was a lot of money. And we had about a 10-minute ride around Northville. And I was so scared, my father kept saying, look down, look down. And all I could remember is just all the noise, because you had all the noise because you're right out there and you can see the propeller going on in front of you. So I guess maybe my father got his $5 worth, but I don't think I got $5.
You didn't look down at all.
I was too scared to look.
So you can't tell me what it looked like.
I can't tell you anything, but I can tell you what the inside of that airplane looked like, an awful lot of gadgets and the air and the propeller going around, but I don't remember any of Northville or very little of it. But anyhow, we got back to the ground, and pretty soon a real slick plane came in, and Amelia Earhart came in and landed at the airfield, and got out of her plane and waved to everybody and signed autographs. And after she got down there, she got in her plane and flew to California. And you all know the story of Amelia Earhart. From California, she flew out into the far west, and she was going from island to island, island hopping across the South Pacific, and all of a sudden she disappeared. She was supposed to go from Island B to Island A to Island B, and she never got to Island B. And there's been a lot of speculation on whatever happened to Amelia Earhart, but the soundest story that I can remember, that Japanese were getting ready for Pearl Harbor, and they were building up their reserves way back in the 30s. And she had seen fortifications and airfields that nobody in the world knew except she, because she flew over them. And the story goes that the Japanese shot her down and exterminated her because they could not let any of their secrets get out, because they were planning a future war against the United States. And if they had, where the father wouldn't have been in Pearl Harbor. But she went out into the west and never returned.
And when you saw her here in Northville, that was when, in the 1920s?
That was in the 30s. In the 30s, right. I was born in 1919, so 29, right around 31 or 32. Would have been even 33 is when she was at Northville.
We were talking earlier about the businesses. The Stinson Aircraft plant that was in Northville, that was located where the stores are now, across from the Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah, if you come right down, right across from the Chamber of Commerce, if you came down Katy Street, there are still a couple of factories there right now. So there were many factories all right in there together. So the Stinson Aircraft factory would be right on the corner of Katy Street, where Katy comes into Main Street on the right-hand side here, right on the corner. Of course, the Ford factory is there in Northville. There's another business in Northville called the Silver Springs Bottling Works. and the Silver Spring. Do you want me to tell a little bit about
sure.
the spring?
Yeah.
Okay. In the early days, when I, that spring started flowing in 1923 and has been continued flowing up until just the last few years. So they would take that spring or so, the water was so good from that spring, they called it Silver Springs. And the trains coming through Northville would stop by and pick up this water by the 5-gallon jugs and put it aboard the train. And then when you went into the dining car, they had a big sign there, we serve only Northville Silver Springs water. And that train would run between Saginaw and Toledo. And they also would take that spring water and they would put it in 5-gallon jugs, and by the truckload, each truck going into Detroit would probably have about 35 or 40 or maybe more than that of these 5-gallon jugs turned upside down, and they would take those 5-gallon jugs into Detroit to the J.L. Hudson stores, to the General Motors building, and they would turn the water upside down in the container and refrigerate it, and that's what everybody was drinking in the offices in Detroit. It was Silver Spring water from Northville. They also had a bottling works, and they bottled thousands and thousands of bottles of pop, and they would ship the pop all over this part of Michigan, down where Asher's gas station is now. They used to carry pop, and we kids, we used to go up there and buy the pop and drink it. It was Silver Springs pop, and that was the only kind of pop they drank. There were two popular drinks in those days. One was Berner's Ginger Ale, which is still going, and the other was Northville Silver Springs pop. This was the days before Coke. There wasn't any Coca-Cola.
Did you tell where the bottling place was?
Pardon me?
You didn't say where the
bottling. Oh, excuse me. The bottling works, incidentally, if you go for a walk sometime, walk over top of the railroad tracks and you'll see the ruins of where the Northville Depot was. They talked about the ruins over in Rome of the different buildings over there, where Northville had its own ruins. But you can go there and see where the timbers and the foundations are still there from the old depot. Right east of the depot, right across the road going into the Northville dump there, that is where the Silver Springs bottling works were. And it's kind of interesting, when you'd go in there and watch them, if they had visitors, they could go in and watch making the bottles of pop. And there was a huge, big spring at that time, but right now it's covered over. And they had it all, a beautiful glass over top of the spring, and a lake down into the water. And you look down there, and the sand and the water would just be bubbling up just ferociously. And that was the overflow from there that would go across under the railroad track and into the spring, which was the Silver Springs, which has been going up this recently. And then would flow into the creek. Just one more thing about the spring there. In the early days, there's a cartoonist in Detroit who used to have a cartoon. This was in the 20s, and he would use the Northville Spring as his background for his cartoons. And so his name was Neb, N-E-B-B. Every day he would have a cartoon in the Detroit News and about Nibs. Mr. Nibs did this, Mr. Nibs did that, and they always used the Northville Spring as their background in their cartoon and their pictures of what Mr. Nib was doing. And so for years and years, why that spring was called Nibs Spring, rather than Silver Springs, for the man from the Detroit News. Carrying on a little bit farther, eventually the well ran dry, just like it is at the present time. And so the city of Northville kept getting complaints and complaints and complaints, just like they are right now, what happened to our water. So for a short period of time, in fact, they're thinking of doing this again right now, they hooked up the city of Detroit water through the spring. And so people would come out from Detroit to get a jug of Silver Springs water, which in reality they're giving the city of Detroit water, and they would jug it and take it all the way back to Detroit and drink it, thinking they're getting Silver Springs water, which they were not. They were getting the city of Detroit water. The good fathers of Northville figured that wasn't right, and the Rotary Club thought that wasn't right, so they drilled a well. I thought the well was deep enough, but it was a 40-foot well is what they dug. And a man named Mr. Reed, who has since passed away, said, as long as that well is going there, I will repair it and keep it going. And so for about every two or three years, while they have to put a new motor on that well to keep that water flowing. So when the motor didn't run, the water wouldn't go. At the present time, the water is not flowing out of the spring, so they're going to have to drill that well deeper, probably go down another 50 or 60 feet to hit that same silver springs water. And the reason that the water is not coming out there is a gravel pit on the other side of the railroad track, and they kept digging deeper and deeper and deeper for gravel, and pretty soon the gravel there's a lake filled up there. At the present time, there are two or three lakes. And that first lake there, it's all filled with Silver Springs water. So instead of the water diverting out to the spring, it diverted back and made a huge big lake. And that's right where M Care is at the present time. Up from Griswold Street, you'll see this beautiful pond out there, which is partially in the township and partially in the city of Northville.
And that's where that water is going.
That's where the water is diverted back. Went backwards when they dug the springs. They upset the range of the water coming out. So the water diverted, went into the spring, into the lake. That lake is full of Silver Springs water.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say about the spring?
I think we touched pretty well on the spring. You were asking a little bit about businessmen in Northville a while back, and I didn't mean to miss that. In the early days, there's a man in Northville on Main Street named Rathburn, who sold Chevrolets, and the Chevrolet store, the Chevrolet garage, was right down across the alley from where the Travel Bureau is on Main Street, West Main Street. So. There's West Main Street, there's an alley, and then there were about four or five places of business. In fact, it's kind of interesting at the present time, I understand our city fathers are thinking of putting more stores in there and double-decking the parking lot. But there's Rathburn Chevrolet across the street. There's Dayton One Ford dealership. Down from there, there's a Northville Hotel. In between the Ford Dodge and the hotel was still there. It used to be the Northville City Hall. And the Northville City Hall, the building was torn down a while back, but that's where they kept the fire department. And it's kind of interesting. In those days, we had one police department, one named Mr. Cracky Light. And so when the fire, when there was a fire, why, they had a Model T fire department, and invariably they would have to help and push the fire department down the street and get it going, and then go to the fire, because there weren't too many fires around. So sometimes that fire department, the fire truck, would sit there for quite a while before it went out. So, and on down the street, why, there was Gunsel's Drugstore in the corner. The E&B groceries, which we talked about what Genetti's are. Down next to that was Fidel's, which is still there. Down farther, why, there was a fellow named Orville Olin, who had a clothing store. drugstore named Gunzel's Drugstore on the corner, Stewart's Drugstore. Gunzel's on one corner and Stewart's on the other corner. We always had a Cloverdale Dairy. They also had Jim Spagnolia had a sweet shop in Northville. Now it is called where the liquor store is. They moved over one store, but the liquor store took Brader's. There's a Brader's store in Northville, which is now owned by Black's Clothing Store. That was a Brader's store there. They were in business in Northville and a very good business. The bakeries are always Northville. Always had a bakery. They also had a bank. The bank was owned by Lapham. It was Lapham's State Savings Bank at one time. And the bank was located right up where the jewelry store is at the present time. I can't think of any of them. Some of the other people in Northville was Don Miller. Milk, of course, in those days, everybody had their milk delivered by milkmen. You didn't go downtown and buy a gallon of milk. You had milk delivered to you. So Don Miller, which was delivered milk. There's another fellow named Morris up on the other end of town who delivered milk. I have a little story about that. Would you like me to tell about Mr. Morris delivering milk? So, Mr. Morris got his milk out from a farmer, from all the farmers down in Northville. And of course, in those days, the milk was not pasteurized. And he didn't know about it, but there was one farmer out on 10 Mile Road that had malaria fever. And not knowing it, and he kept saying to his wife, "I really should not be out milking the cattle, milking the cows, because I feel so sick." She said, "Well, you shouldn't be milking them." And so he said, "Well, no cattle have to be milked morning and night." So for a period of days and days, he went out there, but he couldn't stand it any longer, and he kept milking those cattle, and not knowing it, but he was putting the fever right into the milk. Mr. Morris took the milk and delivered it all around Northville, and there were about 10 or 12 people died in Northville from the typhoid fever. My father was one that got the typhoid fever, but he lived through it. If anybody knows anything about typhoid fever, it's very, very bad, and you get a temperature up around 103, 104, 105. Eventually, you can send it no longer and you die. But it was a very sad situation. It wasn't Mr. Morris's fault. He felt very badly about it, but there's nothing he could do about it because shortly after that, all the milk was pasteurized and then homogenized, and then, of course, there was no problem with that again.
What year was that?
That was in the 30s. Rather interesting, when you had milk delivered to your home, you would buy like $5 worth of tickets ahead of time. And if you wanted two quarts of milk, you would tear off two tickets and stick them in the bottle. If the milkman would come up to your porch and see two tickets in your bottle, then he'd already get paid for the tickets, so then he would bring you two quarts of milk. And in those days, the milk had so much cream on it, that was just as the day before cholesterol, that if you think of anything about cholesterol, the more the cream, the better. In fact, most milk had to be 3.4 or better, otherwise it wasn't good milk. But there was so much cream on the bottles of milk that in the wintertime, the milk would set out on your porch and you didn't look and bring it in. The milk would raise right up out of a bottle, and you have about 4 or 5 inches of cream with a cork sitting or the cap sitting on top of it. And many women would take the cream right off the top of the milk and bring it in, and they put the cream out of it. They could whip the cream, it was so rich. But nowadays, of course, with cholesterol, that's a no-no to some people.
I got a couple things more on the businesses that I'd like to get back to from things that you said. You mentioned the Northville Hotel, and when you mentioned it, you said it's still there. Was that the building that was discussed in the Winners, or was the Winners?
Yes, right downstairs now, at the present time, there's a sporting goods store on one side where you sell Michigan and Michigan State clothing and things. That was the old hotel right there.
Do you know when that building was built?
When it was built? I don't know
before
when it was built. But I do remember the old hotel, we used to live right next, was right next door to it, and that was called the old Ambler Hotel. And I remember the days of the streetcar. The streetcar used to come up and stop right on the four corners of Main Street and Center Street. And you've all seen pictures of the hotel, what it looked like. It set on the angle. In fact, at the present time, they've just sold that property. And this is rather unusual also. That hotel set right there in the corner. Aunt used to come in from Detroit, and my sister and I would meet her up at the streetcar track. The first thing we would do was go across the street and have a dish of ice cream in this beautiful old hotel. And later on, that hotel burnt, and it's kind of a jinxed corner, because that hotel must have burnt in the early 30s, and up to the present time, there's nothing ever been on that corner. That building has been open, it's been used for parking lot and different things, and they had to sell the bowling alley about four or five times to four or five different developers, and this developer might go ahead and build something there, and that's been a jinx corner ever since the hotel burned. But that was a beautiful building there and a beautiful hotel. And I don't know why so many buildings burnt, except everybody heated their homes with wood stoves, and I think a lot of times the stoves would overheat, and that's what set the houses or the buildings on fire in Northville.
What can you remember about the way the Ambler Hotel?
Nothing too much about the hotel, except it was a beautiful building, and I had ice cream in there in front of it. I was young, I was probably somewhere between 5 and 10 years of age. I do remember the streetcars in Northville. We used to ride the streetcars in Northville. In fact, the streetcars were very rapid transportation. In fact, eventually they'll probably get something similar to the Shawnee areas so that people want to go downtown Detroit, even up to today. But in the early days, while those streetcars used to go anywhere between 40 and 60 miles an hour, and that was fine, because the cars used to go between 10 and 15 miles an hour down 8 Mile Road in the muddy, bloody roads, and so it was fast transportation. There were two lines of streetcars coming into Northville. One came from Detroit to Dearborn, to Wayne, to Plymouth, to Northville. That was one line owned by one corporation. The other corporation owned the streetcars that went from Northville to Farmington to Detroit with a bypass to go on over to Pontiac. So you could go from Northville to Pontiac by streetcar, or you could go from Northville to Detroit in two different directions. And it seemed like to me that the streetcars went from Northville to Detroit about every half an hour. So it was fast transportation, good transportation, and not only did they haul passengers, but they also, the farmers would bring all their produce in the Northville, and their milk cans, and so when the streetcar headed for downtown Detroit early in the morning, they would take all the farmer supplies down to the farmer's market downtown Detroit. So they hauled passengers, and they also hauled freight, which is a great deal. I remember one day that we were going to go over to Pontiac to visit my grandmother. So my sister and I stood on the corner, and there's a waiting station waiting for the streetcars. and the waiting station is right at the present time. There's four, there's a building now that where they're taking photographs. It's right on the North Center Street. It's the second building on the left-hand side where it says they'll take passport photographs for you. And that building's still there. And that was the place where you'd wait for the streetcar if you wanted to wait inside. But my sister and I were so excited to go to Pontiac and the streetcar that we stood out on Main Street. And they had a big, they had a box about 18 inches square right on Main Street. And there was a green light in there and a red light. And the light was red. And then when the streetcar started coming up Main Street to pick up passengers, the light would turn to green. The streetcar would trip the believer down by the Ford factory. And so everybody got excited that the streetcar was coming to pick them up. So we would get on the streetcar and ride down to Griswold Street, and then the streetcar with the conductor would get out and change the tracks. And we would walk Griswold Street, Dayton High Road, and right down past Meadowbrook Country Club. That's where the streetcar went to Farmington. And then we would run over and get a transfer and go over to Pontiac, visit my grandmother for the day, and then the evening we would come back in the streetcar back to Norfolk again. Talking about the streetcar is kind of interesting. The man who eventually became the governor of Michigan owned the dairy in Farmington, and out of the generosity of his heart, he donated land for the streetcar to cut across between Farmington Road and Grand River. And it was just unusual that the tracks went right by his dairy. So it made it rather nice. He donated the land, but then the farmers would put the milk on the streetcar and bring the milk right to his dairy. He was a very shrewd and a very good man, and eventually became the governor of Michigan. Can't think of his name right off. But,
is it the one that they had the house in the start for?
I think so, yes.
I don't remember the name either, but he was from Farmington.
Yeah, but a little conniving and a little politicsing, but I'll give you the land and you can put your streetcar by my dairy. And then there were more dairies around, but he would get the business because the streetcar went right by his place of business.
How's your voice doing?
Pardon me?
How's your voice doing?
Yeah, it's whole up. I have a cup of coffee.
Okay. Earlier you mentioned the Ford plant briefly. Do you remember the old building?
No. I cannot remember the old building at all. The building I remember now pretty much is the one that's there at the present time. They made bells for cars for years and years and years. And at the present time, they're making gas tanks for the LTD Ford. Ford has changed their design from metal gas tanks to plastic gas tanks. So the business is going out of business. The Ford factory is going out of business. Of course, they've been going out of business for years and years. And this time, I guess it's for sure in December, they're going out of business. Talking about that Ford factory, just a little bit about that wheel going on down there. That wheel is turned by water that comes from the mill race, which is across the street where the village is at the present time. The water is pumped from the mill race under the ground and over to the Ford factory on the top of that wheel. And the wheel goes around, and if it opens up the valve over there, eight times that wheel goes at the proper speed. It's right there at the present time. And during World War II, they had a generator on that field in case the factory was bombed by the Japanese or the Germans. Why, the generator would make enough electricity so the people could get out of that factory, especially at night. After the war was over, of course, as far as I know, there was no bombing and no explosions in the factory during World War II. They sold the generator to Mexico, along with Detroit streetcars. And I don't know if we ever got paid for them or not, but anyhow, that's where the generator went.
So after high school, if you can go back a little bit to this, after high school, you were away from town for a while in college and in the service?
Right. After high school, I went to college, and I went first Eastern Michigan, and then I went to Michigan State, and Rita, my wife, went to Cleary College. So then, eventually, Rita came back to Northville and started working at the Detroit Edison Company. At one time, the Detroit Edison Company in Northville was the main headquarters for the Detroit Edison for this whole part area of Michigan. It went all the way as far as Howell. So Northville was the main office, and the office is, the building is still there. It's a very nice building, a very good building, right on the corner there of Center Street and Dunlap. It was where the bank was. The bank just moved out of it. But that was the main Edison office, with the overhead and the repairing of appliances, and they did all the servicing for Detroit Edison, for Northville, Plymouth, like you said, all the area, all the way to Howell, Michigan. And we either worked at Detroit Edison, and when we started dating, I used to go and pick her up sometimes in the Edison office there, and we would go down on Hines Parkway Drive, and I would pack some sandwiches, and we'd have some sandwiches on our lunch hour. Well, one thing I can also remember of Northville is our old opera house. Back in the 50s, they had the final showing of the opera house, and but I didn't get to the formal showing, but a friend of mine, we went in through a back window, and I remember climbing up inside the building and going up the stairway and seeing the old opera house before they tore it down. And for those who don't know where the opera house is, again, everything is on the corner of Dunlap and Center Street. But the opera house was a large building, and it would seat over 700 people. It was a three-story building, and the building went much farther back than what that alley is at the present time. But it is an excellent opera house. And then at one time, the Northville Record was downstairs in the offices, but they had two places of business downstairs, the opera house up above, and a fellow named Sam Pickard owned it, and he put it up for sale for so many thousands of dollars. And Henry Ford came by and said, "Mr. Pickard, I'll buy your building." Or maybe Mr. Ford didn't, but he had one of his buyers come around and make the offer for him. So Mr. Sam Pickard, who owned a meat market at that time in the building, found out it was Henry Ford who owned the building, and he said, "What does Mr. Ford want it for?" And he said, "He wants to take it down brick by brick, take it to Greenfield Village and reassemble it." And Mr. Pickard said, "Well, if Henry Ford wants it," he said, "I just up my price. So instead of being, say, for example, $10,000, it's $15,000 if Mr. Ford wants it, but he's got all kinds of money, and if he wants it bad enough, why, he's going to have to pay me more." So Mr. Old Henry Ford heard about this, he said to Sam Pickard, "Mr. Pickard, as far as I'm concerned, I've offered you a good price for that, and if you don't want to take my price," he said, "you can take it down brick by brick." And Mr. Pickard, that's exactly what he did. He tore the building down brick by brick, and they hauled it away, which was a shame for Northville. I do remember the opera house in there, and right over the stage, and you'll see the picture of Hoffman's first 100 years on Northville. There's a huge, big bird over the stage with its wings outstretched. And I remember this boy, he and I went in there, and was standing in awe, looking at this huge, big bird with its wings outstretched. And I can't remember if it's an eagle or if it's an owl. It seems like it's an owl. The swings outstretched, and the stage was still there, the old curtain was still there, the seats are still there. Even though it was getting old and began to crumble, you could tell in its heyday it was really the opera house of this whole area. And of course, it was a place to go in Norfolk was to go to Norfolk's operas.
A couple things to ask about that. Now, you said the final song was in the 50s, so it was torn down in the 50s.
It was 55, as far as I remember.
Okay, and
I've seen that written in the Norfolk Liquor, but I think it was also 1955, was when the Norfolk Liquor had the final showing for people of Norfolk who wanted to see it. And they went up to see it, and then it was torn down.
But the argument with Henry Ford was earlier than that?
It was earlier than that. Many years earlier than that, mm-hmm. Before that.
Before Ford. It's Ford died before.
Yes. What did you say about Ford?
Henry Ford. He died in the 40s.
I thought it was a little later than that, but you might be right on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So, okay. When you were a child growing up in the 20s and the 30s, they weren't using the opera house for anything?
No. No, the building was there, but it was, I don't know if it was condemned or what, but they could use the room, they could use the offices downstairs, but the opera house, as you've seen pictures, there was a store on either side, and then there was a wide door in the middle, and that was the door going upstairs, the opera house upstairs, and that door was always kept locked. Even though they did use the places downstairs for businesses.
But the young people in town didn't have much trouble sneaking in to see.
Well, it was boarded up, but there's always ways to remove boards, and I suppose if we got caught, we would have been Cracky Lake would have been after us. Incidentally, talking about Cracky Lake, with Halloween coming on pretty soon now, Cracky Lake was a real busy man on Halloween. Because when I was a boy, everybody had outdoor bathrooms. It was a great thing for the older boys, and I don't remember this too much, but I wasn't quite that old, but the older boys would get 8 or 10 of them together, and they'd go all around America tipping over the outhouses. And once in a while, I heard one story that a man was sitting in his outhouse with a shotgun, protecting his outhouse so the boys wouldn't tip it over. They snuck up over there anyhow, and they tipped him over with him sitting in there with a shotgun, trying to protect it. And the trouble was, they tipped it over with the door down. So he had quite a trouble just later on getting out of the outpost. But Cracky Lake was the only policeman in Northville, and we were getting calls from all over Northville, come to my house quick because some kids are trying to tip over my outdoor bathroom. One other thing I can remember real distinctly, might be of interest, was a lady named Mrs. Watts. In the early days when the Northville and all the other places around had the telephone operators would line up about 8 or 10 of them in a row, each one sitting on a little chair, and when you want to make a phone call, they would take your number and automatically, manually, plug you into the number that you wanted to talk with. At night, while there wasn't very much business, so there was only one person on duty, and that was Mrs. Watts. And she was a night operator. She was also, if there was a fire in Northville, and you want to know where the fire was, either the daytime or night, you pick up the phone, and you say, where's the fire? And so they would tell you it's up on North Center Street or where the fire was, or if they're real busy, they'd say, don't bother me now, I've got to call the fire department. But at night, Mrs. Watts was there by herself, and lots of times she wouldn't get a phone call there for a long period of time. So, for example, if Northville played basketball against Plymouth, and her son was the Northville basketball coach, Ted Watts, you could say, how did the Northville basketball team make out against Plymouth? And so she would proceed to tell you that Northville beat Plymouth 19-24, and she would proceed to tell you who the high point man or girl was who played the game. In the early days, they didn't have basketball, the first team and the second team. They had the varsity girls play first, and then the varsity boys play second. Which I still think would be a good idea right today, I think there'd be a lot of interest that if they would have two games, that she would tell you who won the game. She would tell you where the fire was. She would tell you any of the news of Northville. Like, I think she was kind of glad to talk to somebody. So once in a while she'd say, hold it just a minute, I got a phone call. So she would plug somebody in.
What was the time period that
it seemed like she was on from about 8 o'clock until the wee hours of the morning. I don't know, probably 8 hours. So she probably went on at 8 o'clock at night and stayed till 4 o'clock in the morning. And then somebody else came on to relieve her from 4 o'clock on to the...
So it was probably slow.
Oh, yeah. Where the telephone offices were was right over where the local jewelry store, upstairs over the jewelry store, and he used to go in there, and in fact, was still there at the business, the stairway was still there. There was a dentist up there at the present time, their office building, so I'm there right now.
You know what year is
that? What year, Alexander?
The dentist was Dr. Alexander.
What years was she a cell phone operator?
Well, ever since Northville started having telephones, from the fact, I don't know when telephones came in Northville, but it seemed like me, it was around 1890 up until, I would say almost to World War II, up until the 40s before they disbanded. I'm guessing when they closed, but that's pretty close.
And then after that, they had the regular...
They had the automatics like they have the first time.
And she was operating most of those?
Well, she operated. She was there for many, many years. In fact, she passed away. One little item about her son. Her son had just come out of Albion College. He was a very handsome man with beautiful curly hair, and he was a star athlete at Albion College on the football team. He came to Northville, and he fell madly in love with a junior high school girl in his junior class. And the school board found out about this, and they kicked him out of Northville as a teacher. And they I'm not sure about the girl, but it seemed like they also had her relieved her out of Northville High School. So she had to go somewhere else to graduate, and it was a real, real no-no for a school teacher to be dating his junior in high school. But the girl he was dating was the most beautiful girl in Northville, and he was a handsome young college boy out of college, so they fell madly in love.
Okay, do you have anything you might like to say about the war years in Northville, or were you not here very much?
Well, during the war years, Northville closed right up. Everybody went to a factory to work in a factory. A few of the stores kept going, but it was very, very difficult to keep going in Northville because there's nothing to sell. I remember when I came home from the service and I started working back at the Northville Electric Shop, we had nothing to sell to people except a few lamps. And I know one day we got a phone call from Detroit saying that the company in Detroit named Dechola was holding 6 radios for us. And I got in the car and drove to Detroit to bring these 6 little radios back. And we had a waiting list of people wanting to buy radios, wanting to buy refrigerators, wanting to buy stoves. There was none being made during all the war years. There was quite a backlog of people being without merchandise, so I know I went to Detroit and got those 6 radios, and all I had to do was pick up the phone and call people saying your radio was in, and they came right down and bought it. But during the war years, everybody, like during the Depression, they just hung on until the war was over. In fact, the only place in business, most of the women were running the businesses in Northville, and their husbands, unless they're older, and all their children and boys, they're off to the war effort. One little thing that I might bring in here that might be of interest. one day, back in the 20s, a man named Mr. Ware built a new hardware store in Northville. And he just got the building completed, and he had a stock with shotguns and rifles and ammunition. And the people of Northville got a call over their radios from the state police department saying that Dillinger was coming through this area and to beware. And in those days, nobody ever locked their doors. Nobody was safe in Northville. So that particular week, everybody started locking their doors because Dillinger was coming from Chicago to Detroit. He had a little unfinished business to do with some gangsters in Detroit. He came over to Chicago. He was going to wipe them out because they're giving too much competition. The story goes that he came into Northville, and he was given the blame for it, and I guess he was the one that did it. He came into Northville and went into Mr. Ware's hardware store, cut a hole in the back door, and stole all of his rifles and all of his shotguns and all of his ammunition. And in those days, why, if you want to go hunting around Northville, rabbits or pheasants or squirrels, why, you just pick up your shotgun and walk over here by the cemetery and start to hunt. And everybody in Northville, all the men and a lot of the boys and some of the girls hunted birds and pheasants and rabbits around town. So his store was really stocked with ammunition and rifles. The trouble was that he hadn't paid for them, he bought them on consignment. So when Dillinger came in and emptied his building right out at night, he had the bills for all of these guns and shotguns, but he didn't have the money to pay for them, so he went bankrupt. He went right out of business. And then if you go downtown sometime and look at Black's shoe store, you look up in the top there and you'll see the sign there, Ware's Building, 1929. And that's the building where Dillinger came in and stole all the rifles.
Mr. Ware, is that Don's father?
That's a different Ware.
It's a different Ware.
Different Ware, yes.
Not a relative.
No.
Do you have any memories of yourself as a young businessman in the 40s?
Well, I came to service, my father being an electrical contractor, he was going to make me an electrician. So for the first two or three years, I was out wiring houses in Northville. In fact, I presume that my father and his electrician wired practically every home in Northville in the older section of Northville. Later on, there's a thing called television came out, and so we started selling television sets. In fact, we had the first television set we lived in Plymouth for a little while, so we had the first television set in Plymouth outside of the Mayflower Hotel. So I took a television set home, a great big 10-inch television set, and I hooked it up, and it didn't work very well. I didn't know which way to aim the antenna, so I went down to the Mayflower Hotel in Plymouth to see which way they aimed their aerial, so then I turned mine around and I started getting good pictures. So later on, a crew of men and myself started putting up television antennas all over the village or all over the city of Northville. So in the early days, we would put up as high as 8 aerials a day, 1 an hour, all over this area. So at one time, my father packed a wire to the house in Northville, and I put up television antennas and ran them into the home, practically every home in Northville, or majority of the Northville and the South Line.